Let me ask you this. How much have you spent on a pair of shoes?
What turned into like a $200 investment quickly ballooned into a $420 investment.
I mean,
give me 100 mil, baby.
So what's popping?
Where do we want to start? Do I want to talk about the TaylorMade fitting experience?
Yeah, we can start off with the TaylorMade. Yeah, we went to TaylorMade headquarters in Toronto, or Vaughan, I guess.
The mini kingdom is what they call it.
And what were your first impressions of, because I like, from my understanding, that's the first time you guys have been.
Yeah, first time.
What do you guys think?
So they moved to that office. They used to be in the big Adidas building. But yeah, it was a nice setup. And then their performance lab had a lot of things that you would expect. They had the whole putting area with the putt view. They had all the shafts on the wall, which was kind of cool.
It was cool. Aesthetically, it was like, whoa, like, it was cool.
And then they had all their fitting bays, which had all that technology. That was the first time I've seen some of those.
Yeah, no, the swing system, I think it was called Coors. Was that the name of it?
Yeah.
Whatever it was called, we'll get some info on that. But
yeah,
Jay was basically swinging with a club that had all these little knobs and notches and like little almost sensors basically all over the club. And to see that it could track literally the way you're holding the club, your swing path,
everything.
Down to literally there's no guesswork there, right? Yeah. You're seeing it in real time was pretty amazing. And that kind of led right into like your fitting session, right? Like, I guess that was like the lead in to see what was your starting point for your club build.
Yeah, it was sick. I was really impressed. Even just to know like TaylorMade, you know, the performance lab exists so close to us.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that we're making these relationships with a brand like TaylorMade is really cool. Like, do you want to talk about like who you know there and how we got that fitting?
Yeah, I mean, TaylorMade has been good to us. I love some of their clubs. Like, I use their driver for the past, I don't know, 5-10 years.
Yeah.
I know Graham. He runs the marketing in Canada. I was actually supposed to go out to the Kingdom right before COVID. I got the invite out there, but then COVID happened and it all just got killed. But it had its own, like, Canadian vibe to it. And then we met Mac, who was our fitter. It was awesome. A younger dude.
Mac Daddy. Shout out Mac. Yo.
Shout out Mac.
Big Mac.
Love that. Yeah, so he was just really pleasant to work with, honestly. Wasn't really selling on us on anything. He was just more like, here, try this. We'll see where this is at. All right, maybe we should try a different shaft. Let's see where that is at. And then, for me at least, he was like, okay, well, maybe we're in the middle here.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's different than doing a fitting at, you know, a Modern Golf and a TXG, right? Over there, you're trying different brands. TaylorMade had a ton of shafts, but it was more so kind of zeroing in on the type of TaylorMade driver head that fits your game.
Yeah.
Their three different models were significantly different from each other.
Yeah.
So they had the Core. They had the LS, which was the low spin, and then the Max.
Mm-hmm.
And they all looked and feel like completely different drivers from each other.
Yeah,
you're dead on. I like everything you just said is how I felt. And it was my first time doing a fitting of any kind. And so like to go through that process, but seeing the actual club heads was actually pretty like jarring how big the Max is compared to the LS.
Yeah, that's true.
If you were just trying to make this purchase online or at a golf town,
yeah.
Or, you know, somewhere where you caught a deal, whatever, without actually seeing it and going through that experience, I don't know if you'd get, like, the true value out of a QI10. And so that part was a little eye-opening now. Like, I think it's opened up my perspective when I look at clubs in the future that, like, you need to go through that process, whether it's at least going to a bay and hitting some of them,
mm-hmm.
or actually going through the fitting process and being walked through like all the differences between those club heads.
So true. It adds to the experience,
yeah.
You know, and there is so insightful.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And like Mac, you know, again, like really informative, you know, very good feedback, especially, you know, after we would swing a few times, you know, like.
Yeah. So he set me up with the Core. It was at a 10.5. I'm currently playing about a 9.5 degree. So it, already there was kind of like correcting something that I've been trying to get do some work on, which is get the attack angle up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so felt pretty good. He actually put me in the same shaft that Jay started with, which was a stiff shaft.
Mm-hmm.
Mentioned to him that it was feeling like a little weighty.
Mm-hmm.
And so
heavy.
Heavy, but I still wanted that stiffness.
Yeah.
So he put me into another shaft that actually ended up, in theory, was lighter, but actually felt even heavier. And I could see the dispersion right away. I was pulling my ball a little bit more, and I lost about 15 to 20 yards distance.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I never thought a shaft could make that big of a difference.
Yeah.
Right? Because nothing else changed. My swing didn't change in that time.
So true.
The head didn't change. Pretty incredible. Like, I think that'd be a learning lesson for me and, like, for the weekend golfer out there is, like, go check your shafts. Maybe get fitted just for the shaft part. This guy put a shaft in my hand that, like, I was just... A golf club like that has never felt in my hands before. Like, I haven't had that feeling before where
mm-hmm.
felt light, where I could take it up,
yeah.
but I wasn't losing any of my control.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys know I have a bit of a vicious swing, especially in my downswing.
Yeah.
So I was able to keep that stiff shaft coming all the way through, but still feeling super light that I could come around on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Game changer. Like,
we got sent the Max driver and we kind of talked about it on the other pod where, you know, we didn't love it.
Right.
We weren't really hitting it well. But then once we tried the core, it's a completely different driver and it's suited our swing a bit better. All of our swing, we all recommended the core.
It was interesting. Max said to you guys, like, the Max would have never worked for you guys.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
you're
almost set up for failure on that one because it wasn't meant for you. And it was true. Like,
spot on. And that's what happens when you know, with these, like, you know, stock drivers, you know,
it's
given to us, it's phenomenal for content, you know, but when it comes to using the actual tool, it doesn't really benefit us.
Right.
You know? But it was cool, man. That whole experience was awesome.
Yeah.
For sure.
So what'd you think of the core?
Yeah, it was so the biggest difference for me was just like the looks of, you know, the core versus the Max.
You know?
And the Max is so much bigger. And I'm not really used to that. And to me, it's almost a little distracting.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, whoa, like this thing's fucking huge. Like, what the hell? I'm expecting to hit it further because it's bigger.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
You know? So I loved the core. It's a little more narrow, a little more slick. And then that just already triggers something in my mind. I'm like, yeah, like this looks awesome.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to hit this thing really good.
And then you did really want to try out the LS. How did that feel? I know you... Maybe you didn't see the same results that you wanted to see.
Yeah.
Were you surprised about that?
I was keeping the same swing and the fact that I had a power fade.
Yeah.
I was like, why is that happening?
Yeah.
Is it because of the head?
Right.
You know what I mean? Or the way it's set up? Because with the LS, you're able to maneuver more of the head, right? Like where the weight is distributed. And maybe that's again, we tweaked that later on, but I was super happy with the core, you know, it was great. But the difference between the two, again, is just like that little tool, but visually it looks the same.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I would say, I would recommend doing a fitting with the brand that you prefer when it comes to at least a driver. You know, there are some financial benefits that Graham was mentioning with the shafts kind of being offset when you buy the driver head. But then also the driver itself, it's there's so many factors that it can adjust for it to suit your swing. It's not just the shaft, right? It's the degree of the head, which is a big part.
Yeah.
And so it just allows them to really play around within the same line to find the right, at least specs that match your swing. So
totally.
Yeah. I think it's such a good point. And like nowadays, sometimes they'll waive the fitting fee if you end up purchasing a driver.
So true.
Or they'll, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we're talking about $800 to $900 investments now. So spending an extra 10% to make sure this thing is like, you know, dialed in for you, I think makes sense in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
I know it seems like an additional expense up front. Again, for like the average golfer who's making this first time investment, like, right? Like you might as well just do the extra step and make the investment a bit more worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So when my buddy got fitted at one of the fitters, I won't say who, but
in the GTA. Yeah. Yeah.
And he got fitted for a driver, a 3-wood and a hybrid. And he showed me the bill and it was close to $2,000 just for those three clubs. I think it was 1800 and then he spent 150 for the fitting.
Right.
So yeah, pretty much $2,000. He spent 3 hours there, came back with a receipt, and he's not going to buy a single thing. Golf's expensive, man.
Yeah.
It's an expensive ass sport.
I mean, so with that said, you know, Graham, feel free to send us drivers.
We really like the specs. You sold us on that.
The chef was amazing.
Yeah. But okay, outside of the fitting, we got a chance to see some of the products while Ash was doing his fitting.
Mm-hmm.
These are the SpeedSoft Ink. So it's a new design ball.
Yeah.
It has like splattered paint.
Yeah.
And the SpeedSoft is, he was saying, is more of an affordable ball.
Yeah.
Relative to the TP5.
I think he was saying it'll range from $20 to $30.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You know, very affordable for like the weekend golfer.
Yeah.
One distinct point that he was trying to make with the design is like, you know how people like mark up their balls and things like that? Well, with these ones, you're going to be able to tell like that's your ball.
Right.
Which is smart. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
A little different.
Unless everyone starts playing those. It's like, what color paint did you have on your ball? Okay. So while we're on the topic of products, you want to talk about the footwear that just came out?
Yeah. Before we jump into the footwear, like we also got some hats.
Yeah.
Because they're rocking some hats. Like those are pretty cool. You know?
Yeah.
I like the integration with the traditional logo.
Yeah.
I've been looking for more like interesting ways for them to incorporate it.
Nice.
And I did like the rope look, not being the traditional rope hat because I'm not a rope hat kind of guy.
They're everywhere.
But like stylistically, it's a little bit different. It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Graham was saying how they're kind of moving to a lot of lifestyle apparel.
Yep.
And they saw a lot of success with the Malbin drop that sold out like immediately. Mm-hmm. We got to see all the different hats. They have some nice gloves that even displayed there.
Some bags.
And then the bag.
Were cool.
Yeah. Some look really good. They have like a leather or faux leather bag that kind of had that vessel look to it.
No,
But they had a lot of cool colors. I love the colors that they were coming out with.
Yeah. It's a great looking bag, very slick.
Yeah.
You know, it looks very luxurious.
Luxurious.
I don't know, like, what other colorways did they have? They had
green. The army green, the navy, the cream. Neutral colors that, you know, it just looks really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else stuck out to you there?
Yeah. He touched a little bit on Sunday Red. Obviously, them going after a bit more of a premium clientele. What I'm kind of curious about is, like, you know, Golf Town's kind of pushed the agenda on getting some more luxe brands in there, and people are willing to pay a premium. But, you know, this might be at another, almost like in another tier.
Yeah.
And so I'd be curious, like, and, you know, maybe it's something where we can get involved because we do a lot of e-commerce work. But I'm assuming Sunday Red's going to be a big e-commerce brand within Canada. Because there's probably going to be limited inventory, and it might just be easier to flip it through a website.
True.
And just deal with shipping that way, and make it a bit more demand-driven. So just kind of interested to see how that all rolls out.
Yeah, no, excited. Yeah, for Sunday Red, Graham was just really excited about the quality of the products.
He was.
So, yeah, I mean, that if that's the kind of their focus, then, yeah, over time, kind of like FootJoy, right? Like, again, the logo is very basic, but the brand is built on the products, so it's be interesting to see.
Yeah,
see kind of what comes out from that.
Did he say when he was going to get it? April?
Around, I think May is when they announced the official release.
Got it.
But
got it.
He said we could take a look at it a bit before then.
On to other products.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to talk
about? Last couple of weeks have been big for kicks in the golf space. Obviously, everybody gearing up for outdoor season. Jay got a couple interesting pairs. I don't know, where do you guys want to start?
All right, let's start with the Tour 360s, the Adidas ones.
Yeah, those are dope.
Yeah, they're super clean. The silhouette looks similar to the previous models. Like, they've actually had this model out for, I think it's on its 19th year.
Oh, damn.
It hasn't come out every year,
right?
But it's been out quite a while. So they've been kind of just revamping it every year.
Yeah. And have you been rocking these?
I played some golf in the sim with them. I mean, like all the other Adidas performance shoes that we've tried.
Yeah.
I mean, the fit and the comfort and the performance, all those aspects you can feel.
Yeah.
So if you are like more of a serious golfer and competing,
right,
you would probably love to play in these.
Really?
The traction and like even the toe spike, I noticed that when you swing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, overall, just super comfortable. There's like boost on the heel, and then the light strike on the forefront there.
Boost on the heel. That's
yeah,
cool.
The boost is comfortable.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's a very solid shoe.
360.
Not necessarily like a stylish shoe.
Yeah. It's light.
Very light.
Very light.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, like, honestly, it's just, you know what, I actually, so Jay knows this, like the, I think it's the ZG23s.
Mm-hmm.
The 23s?
Mm-hmm.
The blue and white ones. Like, again, not my favorite shoe aesthetically.
Yeah.
I love playing in that shoe.
Yeah.
Super comfortable, great performance shoe,
yeah.
Durable, waterproof, everything you want out of a good golf shoe. Something like this, again, I actually, when I saw it online, I liked it a bit more than when I saw it in person. And I don't know if it's the green or the white, like, it's just not my vibe.
Yeah.
If this was like an all black pair, I could see myself rocking it. But otherwise, yeah. Me, as they are, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
Like, it's a very clean design, and like, there's not much you can do to, like, I don't know.
Make it better.
Like, looks wise, like you could maybe change the color of the stripe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, all the materials are there. It's high quality.
Yeah. But what categories can you rate them? You know, so comfort.
Yeah, I would say like performance, like aesthetics.
Okay.
And then comfort. Value.
Like, where does comfort go in there then on the first one?
I would say kind of in the performance.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's a big part of it.
Yeah. But and then value.
Value, right? Yeah. Like, this is a, I believe, $270 Canadian shoe.
Wow.
So it's up there. It's,
right.
But
pricey.
I've seen a Malbin shoe that was $400 Canadian. So
that's ridiculous.
Right.
It's crazy. The Jordans were $300.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
This is us getting gouged with the exchange, but still, even as a U.S. dollar, they're definitely up there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so, just it. Like, if I'm looking at these off the shelf, honestly, they're not, there probably wouldn't be something that would be screaming out to me.
No, I mean,
but I do think if I saw it in different colorways, which to Jay's point earlier with the stripes, the green at the bottom, like the gel pack, there's obviously areas there where they can do different color blocking in the future, which makes it really good for drops and future releases and stuff.
Totally.
But for me, like, yeah, I'd be more interested if I was seeing like an all black or something just a bit more, I don't know, unique from a aesthetic standpoint. Yeah, sorry, give us your ratings out of 10.
So performance, start with performance.
I mean, performance is up there, like a 9.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I haven't played a full round in it.
No.
But, yeah. But like, even just analyzing the sole and all the little details, reading up on it,
yeah,
it has all the tech there. So I'll give it a 9 on the performance.
Performance, wow.
Style, I don't mind it. I do like how it's a bit more subtle on the design, so I'd give it like a 6.
Okay.
And then value, like you said, I wouldn't pay that much for a pair, but there were a lot of people hitting me up asking for it. They're like, some people wanted to trade me their FootJoys for that.
No way.
Yeah.
Right. Wow.
So it's a good quality shoe. I think if that's kind of your style, then
yeah,
I would 100% recommend it.
Well, let me ask you this. How much have you spent on a pair of shoe?
Total.
One pair of shoe. Like, what's the most you've ever spent?
Probably like $300.
Do you know what shoe that was?
It's probably the Jordans.
Oh.
Yeah, one of the Jordans. Yeah, but I bought a lot of Jordans. Actually, I bought a lot of Jordans, and some of them I'm holding on to, and they went up in value, so it's like an investment, yeah, almost.
But and what about you, Ash? Like,
that's the thing. Same thing. Like, all my collectible Jordans have always been, I bought them dead stock, so I haven't had to pay the surcharge on them.
Yeah.
The most expensive pair of shoes I actually ended up paying for were
the
silver bullets.
Bought them from me.
The bullets, the 97.
Was that before you knew, like, you knew that I was running that?
No, we were, but it was like, we could have planned that way better. Because
tell it to me. Tell me the story. What's going on?
So, without giving, you know, Jay, like, I got scammed. I got backdoored, which, like, right, like, in a way, so I can't complain.
Okay.
But I bought these silver bullets, right? The 97s, which the 97s were my favorite shoes. I think we talked about this on a previous episode. Like, yeah. I love the silhouette of those.
Yeah.
So I got these 97s. I pretty much paid what the retail was on these things. And these go for like $4 or $5 on StockX. So they're like, I knew I was getting some good value on them.
Yeah.
But then I got hit with like a $200 hit on duties.
Oh, man.
Coming from the U.S. because it was marked at full value.
Yeah.
And so what turned into like a $200 investment quickly ballooned it to $420 investment.
Yeah, just to give you some context, so myself and this guy in the States, we started a dead stock golf shoe website.
Okay.
Did you hear about this?
I think so.
Yeah, golf is dead.
Yeah.
Golf is dead. So that was a problem, though, is first of all, him in the U.S., he was getting all the shoes. Like, like in Canada, Facebook Marketplace and all these places you're trying to find them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not going to drive 4 hours to pick up like a sick pair of shoes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then the biggest problem was, yeah, people from the States buying from me, people in Canada buying from him.
Right.
The duties are insane.
Yeah.
So.
Gotcha.
I mean, a lot of people didn't care though, because it was like.
And they're
super rare pairs.
They're exclusives, yeah.
Yeah, super exclusives.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I apologize on that. I don't control the border, so it is what it is.
How about you? What's your most expensive pair?
I don't think I've spent anything over 200.
Yeah.
That's just in like my shoe closet in general. But if it speaks to me, if it screams to me, like if, you know, I try it on and it, you know, fits the glass slipper.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll definitely make the investment for sure.
Yeah.
But with the next product, with the next shoe, we have the Jordan 9s.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Student 9s.
Jordan 9s. Did you wear these already?
Not. So I haven't worn these outside, but I've played about, I'd say like 9 or 10 rounds indoors now with them. So for all the hype drops that have come out there lately, when I say hype, I mean, you know, like these were, I'd put those in that category.
Yeah.
Easily my favorite shoe.
Really?
Yeah. And so I've always been, you can check these out.
Yeah.
I've always been a little against some of the Jordans, like the 4s, the 6s. I can't wear them out on the course.
Mm-hmm.
I just find them way too bulky.
Yeah.
But these ones still have that chunkier bottom that you're expecting out of like a real basketball sneaker.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the way that they painted the top, right, they really built that silhouette to look a little bit more narrow.
So true.
And so when you're looking down at your feet, you don't see this huge, chunky
clown shoe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, man, design-wise, they killed it. Like, we saw somebody with the cool grays here at Pace the other day.
Yeah.
And I thought they were the golf shoes.
Yeah.
Like, because they look that, like, it really looks like a ball shoe with cleats.
Oh, yeah. They look, out of all of the Jordans, I really like this one the most, like, aesthetically. Like, your point, you know, it's narrow. It's not really this bulky Jordan shoe. And it's pretty light, you know, and that's what I really like about it, too.
Yeah, the patent leather is a nice touch to this design.
Yeah.
It does add, like, that classy factor to it. Makes it look luxurious.
Luxurious.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a classic colorway. Just a quick history was this design came out when Jordan was playing baseball. Mm-hmm. But there was an iconic pic of Jordan wearing the 9s, and he's, like, sitting in the garage cleaning golf clubs.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so that's, like, it's, like, a pick that always gets shared online. The cool gray is coming out right after that. That's another well-known colorway. So I am interested to see what they do with it this year in terms of, like, typically they'll do like a Masters version or you know, some of these other tournaments, but like you could really mess that up on this pair. Like, you don't want to go a little too crazy.
I know.
On this, it could look really dumb in my opinion.
So then why don't we do the ratings?
Yeah, so performance, I mean, I'll be honest, like, I've been wearing them for a few rounds now. The grips on them, like, the same thing that Jay was talking about, like, with the Adidas, like, with with a lot of the Nikes now, especially the more design aesthetic focused ones, you're getting a lot of soft spikes. It felt nice just to have something with a bit of grip on them.
Yeah.
But you're not getting the same kind of like performance grip that you're getting from the Boost or from like some of the, you know, more, you, honestly, even with the Nikes, with those necks that are coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think in that sense, like you're on the performance side, it's a balance of both.
Got it.
I think they do a good job of it. They give them like a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Because typically from these style of shoes, you don't actually get that level of performance.
Yeah. Some of the older ones, the sole were awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really bad. Uh-huh. Boxy, felt like cardboard.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mentioned bringing up like playing at pace on these is that you are playing on a harder surface, right? So imagine you're getting a bit more bounce outside.
Yeah.
They should, in theory, feel even better outside. Design easy 10 for me. I think that translation from the ball shoe to the golf shoe, seamless. They look seamless.
Yeah.
And then what's the last one? Value.
Value.
Yeah. So value is an interesting one for me. I think a kick like this has a lot of emotional, like more of a, there's an irrational reason why you would buy this shoe more than a rational one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to, it's like a do not score for me because it's like, or like it does not qualify, right? Yeah. It's such a personal thing that like.
Yeah, you can't recommend it to someone.
No, this could be a $400 shoe, but if the 9 or Jordan or your collection means that much to you, then the price is actually, it doesn't matter. You
can't really put a value on it.
No.
Depending on, yeah.
And at the same time, if you're looking for value, this wouldn't be your shoe anyways, right? Like you wouldn't be really in the market for a $300
sneaker. Yeah. I notice with Jordans these days, like a lot of them sit on the website for a while. Before it would sell out in hours. Mm-hmm. So they definitely run a higher inventory now.
Cool.
So that, I guess, would bring down the value of a pair like this. But
Right.
You see it all the time, even like the Jordan 1 golf shoe, the highs, the original Chicagos.
Yeah.
Like those were sitting on the shelves too when it first came out. And now they're like
grails. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this will age over time. And once it's kind of off the market, people wear them. So they're not brand new anymore. So,
right. Yeah.
People would want to probably buy those again.
Are you going to get a pair?
Well, I was supposed to get a pair. But I don't know. It's $300. I'm my way.
What's the value at?
No, I'm glad you guys got it. We already kind of got the look of it. Maybe I'll just wait for another colorway that looks sick.
Cool, great.
Yes.
All right. Why don't we move on to the last shoe?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The Puma.
And look at those bottoms.
Look at those bottoms.
Yeah, these are definitely the nicest bottoms that just came out, visually at least.
Agreed. Yeah.
Very unique cleat pattern. I don't know if I don't think you could change these though.
No.
Yeah, so it's kind of a weird design in that way.
Yeah.
I guess over time they'll just wear out, but
seems very durable though.
It does.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, it's not like the spikes don't stick out too much, but there's a lot of them.
Wow.
A lot of spikes. So I'm curious what kind of encouraged this design, but the bottom also kind of looks like glass.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
And yeah.
But then the top itself, it's fairly standard, similar to the like Adidas.
That Adidas, yeah.
It's a very kind of clean, basic look, but
yeah.
I tried these on. I haven't got to play in these yet, and
yeah.
They're all right. I don't know.
Yeah, what size are we all the same size?
No.
Roughly? No.
Well, can you fit in 9s?
I probably could. Why? Are you?
Because I'm 9.
And you're
10 and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was gonna say it'd be cool if we all wore like the same shoe.
Yeah, that'd be convenient. Yeah.
Yeah, but we're all different sizes. This guy's a left-handed golfer. Like,
I know.
Doesn't really work out, but. But yeah, I can't really rate these yet. I haven't really given it a fair shot.
Yeah. Well, looks-wise, what do you guys think?
This here just seems a little bland, side.
Yeah.
I feel like it could have added some more. Even just the Puma logo would have looked sick there.
Yeah.
The side.
Yeah.
I get it. They were looking for like that clean golf shoe kind of look.
Yeah.
But actually, I love the way the back looks. That black kind of like, yeah, way more curvature and like movement. And they got that in the sole, like in the bottom as well. But like the schedule head, and
it's like almost unfinished.
The toe, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like so much detail, so much detail at the bottom. The heel looks really nice. And then I just, they kind of just like.
Design team was like, screw it.
Yeah.
Good. But, we just released this.
I mean, again, kind of like we talked about on the Kang pod, it's like you're catering to a mass audience. You don't necessarily want to overdo it all the time.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone, but.
But the thing is, so. I typically would agree with that. I think Adidas does a better job balancing that. To me, that runs the risk of, like, they almost played it too safe on the top.
Very safe.
Right? Whereas the bottom is actually kind of wild. So if the bottom doesn't resonate with one audience and then the top doesn't resonate with the other audience, like, you might have just missed the whole market.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting to see them up against, like, right next to a couple of the other
so true
shoes, and you're like,
they do look very similar.
Yeah.
Right. The toe.
The toe is
just like just like a full toe, but
Out of the three, like, aesthetically, which ones do you guys love the most?
I think the question would be really out of the other two. But they're again, if I'm just a customer going to a golf town, going to a retailer, I'm probably picking up the Adidas ones. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in the Puma bottoms.
Yeah.
But it looks like an unfinished shoe, I think.
Well, yeah, I think these are more of a value shoe, the Puma ones, over the Adidas ones.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm curious to actually give it a shot and see how they perform.
You guys should try them out today while you guys are playing.
Yeah,
actually, I might give these a run.
I really want to take these nines outdoors, but, you know.
It's still a little too early.
This is a Toronto issue, right?
Like, did y'all hear me? These guys are playing today.
What day is it? March?
Yeah.
The big thing here is, like, I think what always delays our openings is the deep frost, like the overnight frost that kills a lot of the grass. We haven't really been hit with any of that heavy stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And, shit, man, global warming is real.
Yeah.
Because it's March and, like, it looks like a nice day out there to play today.
Honestly,
a lot of people are probably playing right now.
Kind of wild.
Yeah.
It's all good.
All right. For product, I don't know if you guys want to talk about anything else. We could talk about a little bit about, you know, Full Swing Season 2 kind of just came out. I know they released all of the episodes. I don't know how far you guys got, but I'm definitely looking forward to, like, you know, taking it all in and seeing what's good.
How far did you get?
I just got to the first episode.
First episode? Okay.
Yeah, which was pretty solid.
I'm on the second episode. I'm trying to do the sleep a little earlier these days.
Yeah.
Which then kills into my Netflix time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm squeezing it. I'm on like the tail end of episode 2 now.
Nice.
Yeah. I think I'm on the 4th now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the 3rd is like one of the best?
That's what I felt. The first three were really good, and then some of the stories, kind of tail off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to start a Netflix documentary during this time, the timing couldn't have been more perfect.
I agree. Yeah.
The whole Liv and a lot about Rory.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
that's how it started, right? Episode 1 is about more Rory, PGA versus, you know, Liv and Brooksy.
Like, yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and just like how the battles kind of ended up at all the majors and stuff. It was a reminder of, like, Brooks had a freaking good year last year.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
fucking right, Brooksy.
I'm like, you know, and he was somebody I was always a fan of. Some of the stuff in the first season kind of surprised me about him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, some of that, the personal stuff he was dealing with, I didn't really know.
Right.
You know, people hide it in different ways. And, like, I, you know, and then to see the way he bounced back. Winning, right? Like, I'm like, I kind of forgot about that. It's kind of dope watching some of those highlights again.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was on a tear.
How many? Because he won a major last year, right?
The PGA Championship.
The championship.
And then he was second at the Masters. Yeah.
Yeah, he was in the lead going into the final round.
It's a Sunday, bro.
And Patrick Reed was up there. Phil had a crazy, a crazy round.
All those Liv dudes.
All the Liv dudes. And then Rom won it. Who is now a Liv dude. So the Masters is going to be interesting. I'm really curious to see the entire field, but
no.
I love this, like, PGA Liv battle.
Yeah, I do too, man.
And the Liv guys had a chip on their shoulder too, so it was kind of cool.
Yeah,
to see them actually make
a platinum, titanium, gold-plated chip on their shoulder.
Yeah,
I know. I saw one of Brooksy's comments. The question was, you know, do you think any of the Liv guys are missing out on, you know, on any of the tournaments that the PGA is hosting? And then Brooksy was like, yeah, oh yeah, like I'm really missing out on the Mexican Open. Like the winner gets $8 million and my wife's purse is more than that. It's so funny, man. It's just like money talks, dude. Like,
money does talk.
Well, and that public investment fund, like seeing some of the behind the scenes stuff around how that deal went down and stuff. They're doing some big stuff in the sports world right now.
Yeah.
They just did another deal with the ATP, the men's tennis side.
Yeah.
Basically like the PIF will be on every ranking board.
Yeah.
Like, you know, these are big moves in like two like pretty classic sports.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see where they kind of take it next.
Yeah.
Sure.
But you're right, money talks.
Yeah. There was a lot on Rory, on his like involvement and kind of being poster boy of all this drama. And I don't know, it felt like he was making a lot of excuses for his bad golf, to be honest. It just kind of always came back to this as a distraction, which I get. But, you know, I think it was a distraction for a lot of golfers, and a lot of them still kind of came out.
I just feel bad for Rory, man. Like, he's such like this loyal dude who's been committed to the game of golf, and it's always been the PGA. And now like this whole thing comes out, Liv, and then he's sort of now this like, you know, I'm sure you guys hear it all the time, that sacrificial lamb.
Yeah,
you know, he's like this guy who's just taking all the heat now, and then people are just dipping. Like, how does that make Rory feel?
Yeah, you know? With all that said, he also decided to take that seat.
Totally.
Right? So, like, if you want to wear the crown, there's responsibilities that come with that. He's not hurting, right? Like, to be honest with you, like,
no,
he's one of the few players on the PGA side that don't need that type of endorsement or that type of contract.
Right.
And so I have to take all of that with a grain of salt, because you're still sitting on a bit of a pedestal. When again you take on that responsibility, you kind of have to take on some of that pressure that comes with it.
Yeah,
and I don't deny that it plays a huge factor, and it must be like emotionally draining and mentally draining.
Yeah,
but if you signed up for that, then that can't be the excuse on the golf side.
Yeah,
or should be.
I mean, he's still top two golfers right now, but he hasn't won a major in a while. Right. And a lot of these majors are now like Liv versus PGA. And so those are the big tournaments that he needs to show up at no matter what. But it's been a while, even before this Liv stuff happened.
I think it's been like a decade.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a while.
Shit.
It was cool to see. It was like a head to head with Rory and Brooks, because they both had four majors.
I know.
And then Brooks came out, almost won the Masters, and almost won the PGA Championship. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I was kind of rooting for Brooks during that part,
that run. But didn't he win?
Yeah, he won. He has five now.
He did win.
So
you have the one up. Because Rory got all of his, I guess, pretty close together, right? It was a couple year run, like early on.
Early, as a kid.
Yeah. Now, with that said, he has held that ranking for a while, right? Like, he's been on and off one. It's funny how they asked him about him having world number one ranking.
Yeah.
Because technically, you know, you're missing half the field now.
That whole thing, and then just him not winning. I just like, man, this guy, like, he's been on this pedestal for so long and then hasn't won. And like, who are you?
Well, it might almost take somebody else coming up to the mantle now, right? Sean Rahm could have been that guy.
I know.
But like, who else is there? Like, Scheffler's Scotty. Not. Yeah, but he's not necessarily like the most like
vocal.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, you go to like JT. Or, you know, Smith, like those boys.
Maybe.
I mean, Rahm did say before that he didn't care about the money and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then he took the money. he was number one at times.
Yeah. You can't deny what they're doing has been good for the game.
Yeah.
There's obviously that still like the PIF has some like negative connotations out there to it.
Yeah.
In general. So I'm still curious to see if that'll start correcting itself. You're hearing a lot about more, some more progressive things happening there, which is good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully them doing more stuff globally will help what's happening regionally there.
Yeah.
But like, it's still kind of interesting that like when we talk about LIV versus PGA, everybody's kind of forgotten about that conversation.
I know.
Or like the fact that these guys are just kind of like, is it literally the most ethical money that you're getting and all of that side of it?
Right.
Not to get all
political. It's almost like lost. Like that.
Yeah, it totally gets lost for sure in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
give me 100 mil, baby.
Yeah. And then another story that you probably haven't watched yet, but it was Ricky Fowler's little run.
Oh, yeah.
Did you get that part?
No. Don't spoil it for me, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's no spoilers. Like, it happened. Like, I won't tell you.
True.
Like, he lost the U.S. Open.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
But he
won.
He was in the lead. Actually, yeah, there might be a spoiler. But, okay, I'll hold off on that. But, this leads to my other point, is just, like, how...
Ricky.
Yeah. Just how this full swing series, giving an outlook into their life, really changes my perspective of like actually watching golf. Because once you understand that, like, where they're at mentally in their game and what they're doing outside of the actual tournament, like seeing Ricky kind of like work with different instructors and try to get his game back, it makes golf more exciting to watch, in my opinion.
Totally.
And golf is a different sport than other sports because it's a lot of it's mental. It's a mental sport. So if you can't really understand where they are mentally, then I feel like you don't get the full experience of their golf game, right? It's very like top level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think that's where there could be an opportunity for the PGA and you know, just for golf fans to see. You see it on YouTube when they talk through shots, what they're hitting, how they're gonna play it. Like a lot of that gets lost during the coverage.
I know.
Which you would like to kind of see more of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome, man. Like for the audience to consume sort of what they're thinking.
Yeah.
Is like on a whole different level, you know, like we have all these like surface level thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh yeah, like, you know, there's a bunker there and there's, you know, I'm 150 yards out.
Yeah.
You know? Like I wonder how much more in depth these guys are taking their thoughts, you know? Like,
yeah. Because you just see a swing and it's like ends up being perfect. You're like, okay, how'd you get there? Like, like, why'd you aim on that side of the green?
Totally.
And where was that read coming from? How are you going to hit this bunker shot? Like, I don't know how they could do it. Maybe technology down the road will like read their mind and put it on the screen. But
yeah. Actually, well, on that topic, I'm very curious to, you know, get inside of your guys' head when you're playing golf. You know, like, how much are you really thinking about? And what are you thinking about? You know, like your swing thoughts. Is your swing thoughts different than your driver from, you know, like 150 yards in? You know, kind of give me like a little, you know, feeler for what you guys go through.
How much time we have? Go ahead, Ash.
You know, for me, like with driver, I'm trying to be a bit more instinctual. Like I've taken so many swings here at pace. I think I need to go out there and just trust what I'm doing now. For me, it's on my driver, it's really about where I tee up the ball and being consistent with that.
Oh, interesting.
And that kind of sets the tone for my rounds a lot of time with how the driver's going to feel.
Like, what do you mean, like, where you tee it up?
Like, literally the height of my tee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like how high am I teeing up the ball? It really helps me dictate my attack angle early on in the round.
Oh, cool.
And I feel like if I can get that rhythm going, I do a lot less adjusting throughout the round. So getting that dialed in early, and then with the irons, my biggest problem is I rush. Mm-hmm. Like we do play typically pretty fast.
Yeah, yeah.
But knowing my swing type now and a bit more details on it, a little bit more setup at address would probably take me a long way with where my ball ends up going, even on my miss hits.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. What about you?
So my swing thoughts?
Yeah.
So one of my better rounds I had, this was like years ago, and I think I read it like it was a Rory quote, but it was to not think about anything. Because at that point, you just swing your swing, just focus on hitting the ball. Like, as opposed to everything else, just focus on the fucking ball. Which sometimes when I'm doing too many things, like thinking about my takeaway, thinking about my follow through, I forget like I'm trying to hit a ball.
Yeah.
You know?
That's it.
But, yeah, so my driver right now, I have too many swing thoughts. I have too many instructors, and they're all messing me up right now. But my irons, I feel, have been pretty solid.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about my takeaway and keeping my hands high for my swing.
Okay.
Because then I eventually get steep.
Yeah.
That was one tip I got from an instructor that helped me out a lot. So every time I get to my top, it's like a very slight pause.
Yeah.
And then I'm able to hit it pretty consistently. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of in the same, like, I don't really like thinking too much. You know, it's like I get up to the ball and I'm like, okay, like, there's my line. All right, now just fucking hit it.
Yeah.
You know, just make sure to make good contact with the ball and hopefully, you know, the rest happens well.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you hit your driver pretty consistently.
Yeah. I mean, yesterday at the fitting was really good. I was like, oh, wow, these are going, you know, and they're pretty consistent. So it's good.
Would you say you do that with your wedges too? Like, are you, like... Are you? I feel like you don't commit to a type of chip or a shot.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you do the bump and run. Sometimes you do a flop.
It's really, maybe it's just confidence, you know, like I'm not really sold on a certain type of shot, whether it's a bump or a flop, or if I just want to like whatever, maybe it's just confidence. It's like, Josh, like
feels good.
Nail, like, you know, I rather roll the ball than flop it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there's more or less room for error that way.
Yeah.
But who knows, man? Like, we'll see. We'll see. No idea. But the short game is definitely where I need to improve, like 1,000%. Maybe I'll start putting here more often for sure.
Yeah. The putting helps a lot, actually.
Yeah. I read greens now like I do on track.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like 8 feet. I know exactly where I want my ball to stop and then leg out from there. And I think it's really helpful with those long putts.
Yeah.
So I really feel confident on like a 30-foot putt that I can at least put myself in a really good, comfortable 2-putt scenario.
Totally.
If not, hopefully like steal 1 or 2 putts around.
Yeah.
That'd be like the...
It's just you end up getting a lot of reps at the sim. Yeah. So your tempo more consistent.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, same thing with me. I don't even see a pin anymore. I see a screen. I'm like, okay, this is where the 10-foot is.
Yeah.
I'm going to roll it past.
Yeah.
And I hit 8 1 putts last round, so
that's just you.
Yeah, and they weren't even like gimme 1 putts. Like I didn't stick any of those close.
Yeah.
They're either like 10 to I think I had like a 25-foot putt. So
just to echo that, 8 1 putts.
Putts.
That's insane. Were those pars, birdies? Like
I got 3 birdies.
Oh my.
Actually a lot of them were bogey saves, which actually kept me in the round. Like if I got a double, I would have probably blew up, but
yeah.
Some bogey saves were just like, it's just energizers almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just kept me going.
Totally.
So yeah, it changes your round when you start seeing some putts roll.
Oh, for sure.
Cause you're moving on to the next tee and then you realize okay, it's okay to hit some bad shots off the tee.
Yeah.
As long as you can make up for it elsewhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Short game was a game changer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking A.
Almost golf season.
Yes.
Are you guys pumped?
Yes. Yes. I signed up for 2 tournaments.
Already? Oh, yeah. Already?
I did.
What kind of tournaments?
One's a match play and one is like an amateur.
Yeah.
Stroke.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Damn. I want to do one by the end of this season, maybe early next season.
Yeah.
I've talked to a couple of the coaches, like that's one of the goals that I have for myself.
Nice.
He's like, and I'm not going out there to win.
Yeah.
I just want to go compete. I want to go do one.
See how it feels.
Put myself out there. I want to face a little bit of competition.
Yeah, man.
I want to have a couple shitty holes and deal with that.
Yeah.
Right. And like some of the shame that comes with being at the bottom of a leaderboard. Like I have no qualms with any of that. I just want to do it. So
yeah.
When it comes to like even improving the driver, working on the swing quite a bit.
Yeah.
The last few weeks, especially, I've been putting in some hours.
Yeah.
I want to get geared up to at least go just try one out.
Yo, there's some where, there's like a better ball.
Yeah.
Where we could like join. I think that'd be sweet.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
I was thinking that. We should like find a bunch of scramble tournaments or better ball.
Yeah, man.
Make a little team.
That would be
and
fun.
Just like.
And be fucking like,
join all of them.
Yeah.
Be so cool.
I think we have a good balance between the three of us.
Yeah.
And yeah. We just need.
One more.
I know.
Would you want like a long driver or like just a short game chef?
I'll be straight up. Short game chef.
Yeah, yo.
Because I think at any given point, with that said, actually, no, I should think that through because all three of us could bomb a drive. All three of us could also pull it, do some weird shit, right? Like if you had a long driver who's consistent,
yeah,
I think I would value that, because on our iron game and our short game, I honestly have pretty high confidence that between the three of us,
yeah,
we're putting at least one dart down.
Yeah. Right.
And so
even with the putts, man, like I feel so confident with you, the two of you on the squad.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's no way we should be missing a fucking putt.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a long hitter would be valuable on drives and on those longer par fives, put us into attack range.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And then for us, like chipping and putting, like, yeah, our cleanup game is.
Because like Josh can get it out there and he's pretty consistent.
Yeah.
So if you find like a Kyle Berkshire that can just like 350, get us those extra yardages, not all the time, obviously.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But why not? Like, yeah, get, yeah, maybe there'll be some drivable greens, and if he can get us there.
Well, and the beauty is, if he has a bad shot, we have Josh at 300.
Yeah. And then worst case comes down to you. I'll just iron it out or something, like just to make sure I take the pressure off.
Yeah,
we got a good squad.
That'd be fun, man. Look into it for sure.
Yeah, let's pick a few.
Guys.
Cool.
Episode, what is this, episode 4?
Episode 4. Yeah, episode 4. We're going to start doing these once a week.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on to talk about. We didn't even talk about the Anthony Kim stuff, which I don't think we need to at this point. But a lot of weird, kind of cool stuff happening. Drake and LeBron investing in the PG.
Oh, yeah.
All that stuff. So it's just cool stuff that fall into our world a bit.
For sure.
That we're going to touch more on in the future. Sure.
Good time to be alive, y'all.
Yeah.
So thanks for tuning in. Subscribe.
Love it.
Yeah.
Share.
Do the do.
Yeah.
Do the
do. Comment. Give us feedback. Let us know what you're liking, what you want to hear us talk more about.
Yeah. And actually, we'll give away a hat.
Yeah,
these tailor-made hats.
Tailor-made hats.
This one or the rope hat.
Yeah,
nice. To a comment.
Yeah, perfect.
Cool.
We'll do that.
All right, done.
All right,
y'all. Peace.
Have a good one.